on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another episode of InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. It is, in fact, the second to last Tuesday of this year. Each and every show I do, each and every time I say it, I am shocked at how quickly the year has moved. And from a trading perspective, I mean, it's almost over at this point. You know, we got a couple short days coming up. You got liquidity, which tends to be drier this time of year. And before you know it, it's going to be 2026. And just as people do within their lives, we at InvestTalk, we at KPP Financial, decided to take a little time to reflect on what 2025 brought us. And in this reflection, we had the idea of creating an InvestTalk holiday special, which dropped on our YouTube channel just last week. It was, in my opinion, a pretty fun end-of-year episode to record where Justin and I looked back at the biggest market themes of 2025 and highlighted some of the lessons that we learned and what we can take from a knowledge perspective into 2026. So if that sounds interesting, and I hope it does, go check out the InvestTalk holiday special free on our YouTube. Just search InvestTalk with two T's. And while you're over there, don't forget to subscribe and turn the notifications on. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics for you. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hello, InvestTalk. I am calling with a question on the company Bristol Myers Squibb. The symbol is BMY. I'm looking to get your opinion and your thoughts on what a good entry point would be for the stock. I will be listening to your podcast for the answer. Thank you.
BMY Bristol Myers Squibb is a $113.5 billion market cap biopharmaceutical company. So they develop and market drugs in oncology, in the cardiovascular space, within immunology, and also neurological diseases. It's got quite a bit of debt, about $55, $51 billion in debt outstanding. Pays about a 4.61% dividend yield, which is in line with where it's been over the past couple years, but performance has been lacking, at least over the past 52 weeks, and really, I mean, relative to the market and its industry for the better part of the past 3 years. I mean, in 2023, it's down 28.7%, so it underperformed the market by 52 and its industry by 31. Underperformed the market last year by 13. It's down 4% year to date, underperforming its industry by 31.8%. And in spite of this, right over the past 3 months, it's had positive performance. 20.86% is what it's up over the past 3 months. So you saw a pretty huge pop recently on the back of, well, good news from its phase 3 trial of ADEPT-2, which is one of its Alzheimer's drugs, while also, you know, having a bit of relief compared to competitors in terms of the cost pressures that it's facing. But from a technical standpoint, I mean, relative strength has been pretty weak going back all the way to April, right? Profitability is supposed to be positive in 2025, but they had a bit of a rough year in 2024, return on equity, -39%. I mean, look at the volatility here in earnings. At the same time, revenue growth really slowed down as well. You had an explosion coming into the pandemic. 2024, $48 billion in revenue. It's supposed to fall to $47.9 billion this upcoming year. And net income, however, is supposed to be positive again, where, again, it lost income, or rather had a negative net income last year. So what I see is a company that is struggling to find a direction that popped certainly on good news from its Alzheimer's drug in that trial. But what is the catalyst going forward? Is there a catalyst in the short term? Is there a catalyst on the horizon? I'm a little hesitant for this company that has underperformed over the past 3 years. It's struggling a bit to get real revenue growth, sustainable revenue growth to pop in the short to medium term because the industry at large is having issues with cost pressures. And certainly you're seeing this volatility in this company that leads me to believe now might not be a good time. So for now, I'm going to keep it on my watch list. That is Bristol Myers Squibb, ticker BMY. Well, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, but it all starts off with my main focus point, which concerns this topic, pre-positioning for the January effect. Due to year-end tax selling, small cap stocks have historically outperformed in January. We'll explain why the January effect happens and highlight specific small cap ETFs investors might want to consider buying before the calendar flips. Also, a couple more important stories, including one on mortgage rates and how, in spite of them falling, owners still are not selling. We also will touch on Wall Street's newest way to make some money off of the tariffs, and that is betting on tariff refunds. So that's an interesting story we'll bring to you today, as well as talking about gold and silver. They hit fresh record highs on geopolitical tensions. How might that shape up in 2026? We also have some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, as well as some voicemail calls ready to play, including one on stock screeners and another on American Airlines Group, ticker AAL. As always, we welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show, but we are going into our first break. If you're listening live, via our stream, or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHART to get through to me live. While we're waiting, we're headed into a break, but when we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce a high-value, limited-time offer, the Holiday Estate Bundle. It's specifically designed to help new households quickly establish a solid foundation for their financial and personal legacies before the year ends. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit, and it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com, and while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions, 888-99-CHART. 2025 is almost out the door, but you've still got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are on the job. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get your question in before the holiday break. But why don't we start kicking things off by talking about the market today. U.S. stocks closed mostly higher. Dow is up 16 basis points, S&P 500 up 48, NASDAQ up 57, Russell 2000, though, finishing down the opposite way, down 69 basis points on the day. In fact, the S&P logged a fresh record close, but you're seeing breadth was a bit negative. The equal weight S&P lagged the cap-weighted version by more than 60 basis points. Breaking it down, big tech was mostly higher, NVIDIA, one of the best performers amongst that group, while semis, industrial metals, exchanges, and media fared well as well. Underperformers included transports, chemicals, restaurants, food and beverage, home builders, pharma, and staple retailers. Treasury is a bit mixed. You did see the curve flattening with yields up about 2 to 3 basis points, primarily focused on the front end. Dollar index was down 30 basis points, and gold finished up 80 basis points, hitting a fresh record high above that $4,500 an ounce level. Crude oil ended up 60 basis points, reversing some of that earlier decline that we saw after the latest headlines out of Venezuela. Overall, though, I mean, I mentioned it at the top of the show, this time of year tends to be quiet. So you saw a rather quiet session with low volume ahead of tomorrow, where on Christmas Eve, there's always an early close. So the market does close at about 1 p.m. Eastern. Today's economic data offered a bit of a mixed macro takeaway. You had stronger hard data with GDP and ADP private payrolls, but you also had weaker soft data. You had consumer confidence and the Richmond Fed Index showing a bit of softness. On net, what did it do? Well, it did push the Fed rate cut expectations in a bit of a hawkish direction. The market's now pricing in just 41 basis points of rate cuts through year-end 2026, down over 10 basis points in the past two sessions. The Santa Claus rally, positive seasonality into year-end, probably some of the biggest key upside catalysts. While from a tax standpoint, again, you have the one big beautiful bill coming into effect next year. You have tax refunds, you have potential stimulus. All of this really driving the market considerably higher. A little bit south, Venezuela tensions remain in focus. The media report indicating more U.S. special ops aircraft and troops have moved into the Caribbean this week. So certainly any movement there could shape oil markets and move broadly into other sectors. Diving a little bit into the data, because it was a busy morning, so we won't mention everything. But ADP weekly private payrolls, which showed a four-week average of 11.5 thousand, down from last week's 17.5 thousand. The big story, first read of Q3 GDP was 4.3%, well ahead of the consensus of 3%. GDP price index up 3.7%, ahead of the 2.9% consensus, while the core PCE prices number was about 2.9%, well in line. Elsewhere, December consumer confidence missed, though prior years was revised higher, and the labor market differential narrowed a bit, though the one-year inflation expectations fell month over month. Not much on tap for the rest of the week. It is a holiday-shortened week, and with volume so low, not much really movement from this data regardless. Alrighty, let's tackle our first YouTube question of the day. And it says, I'm confused as to what to enter in investable assets. It says, I enjoy listening to your show. Was thinking about a portfolio review, but confused as to what to enter in investable assets. Most of my assets are already invested, mutual funds, index funds, REITs, and stocks. Cash in my money market is what I would call investable, but this is a small part of my portfolio. So investable assets includes really things that you are invested in, real estate assets, stocks, bonds, money market funds, treasury bills. Anything that is an investment is what we're talking about when we're saying investable assets. You're obviously, for this purpose, if you're looking to do a portfolio review and you're curious, what do I put in here? Well, I mean, from our perspective, illiquid things like real estate, stuff like that, you can talk to us about that. But what we're really talking about is your brokerage accounts, your IRAs, your Roths, 401ks, all this information that really is what you should be judging when you think about holistically managing a portfolio. Going off on a little bit of a tangent here, I mean, we oftentimes have clients say, well, you know, I think I'm taking on too much risk here. And going through their suitability for risk, I have to remind them that when you think about your portfolio, you don't think about things in isolation. You don't think about, okay, this is the real estate exposure I want, and then completely ignore it when you're thinking about where to allocate your funds and other aspects of your portfolio. It has to be a holistic approach. Your total risk exposure is predicated and based upon all of the assets you're invested in across everything. Most people tend to be far more conservative in their 401ks, especially relative to their brokerage accounts. Number one, just because people tend to go and target date funds, which inherently are more conservative than what they're going to do when they invest in individual stocks or ETFs, but also because the options are lower within their 401k. And so if you say to yourself, you know, I have a risk tolerance that wants to put me in mid-caps, some international names, but I feel like over here, I'm a little bit too invested in there. You have to remind yourself, well, in my 401k, maybe I'm 30% in bonds. It is. This question was obviously directed about our specific portfolio reviews, but I think it's relevant to everybody out there. It helps you. It should help you frame an idea of how you should be thinking about your portfolio and managing all of those assets together. Thanks for the call. Actually, that was from our YouTube channel. Hopefully they checked out our holiday special. Well, guys and gals, we don't have much time left in 2025. We don't have many shows left in 2025. But while we're still here, we're going to continue to work on that singular objective to help make you a better and more informed investor. That being said, we are headed into another break. My main focus point is still coming up. It's about the January effect, what it is, what it means. Is it even real? And most importantly, we'll be answering more of your finance and investment questions here on Invest Talk. This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment, an Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every January, the same question comes back to Wall Street. Is there something special about the first few weeks of the year that gives stocks a built-in boost? That idea, known as the January effect, suggests stocks tend to rise early in the year after being sold down in December. Now, the traditional explanation centers on tax loss harvesting, where investors sell losing positions before year end and buy them back once the calendar flips. Another long-held belief is that year-end bonuses and other allocation changes hit the market in January, creating a burst of buying pressure. On paper, sounds neat, sounds logical, which is exactly why it's been repeated for decades. But when you actually look at the data, the story becomes a bit less convincing. Since the early 90s, January has produced gains only slightly more than half the time, barely better than a coin flip. Even during the powerful bull market that followed 2009, January performance was evenly split between gains and losses. That alone challenges the idea that January is some kind of dependable launch pad for stocks. What has shown up more consistently is a short-lived effect in smaller stocks, particularly in the first 1 to 2 weeks of January. Small cap stocks tend to be inherently volatile. They are less liquid and more heavily impacted by year-end selling pressures. So when that selling pressure disappears after December 31st, prices can rebound quickly even without any fundamental changes. In other words, it's not that January creates strength, but that December temporarily suppresses prices. Small caps also attract investors looking to rebalance portfolios earlier in the year, especially those seeking higher risk or catch-up performance. That helps explain why any January strength is usually front-loaded and tends to fade pretty quickly. This also answers why the effect has weakened over time. Markets are far more efficient today with algorithmic trading and quantitative models designed to exploit and neutralize predictable patterns. If a seasonal edge were truly reliable, it would be what is called arbitraged away almost immediately. That's why many professionals now view the January effect as market folklore and not really a usable investment strategy. Psychology still plays a role, but it's inconsistent and most importantly, hard to trade with confidence. Investors often start the year with optimism, fresh goals, a willingness to take risk, but sentiment alone doesn't guarantee returns. This is especially true in an environment dominated by passive flows, index rebalancing, and automated execution. So when January rallies do occur, well, they tend to reflect broader momentum already in place rather than a calendar-driven catalyst. Strong Decembers often lead to stronger Januaries, not because of tax effects, but because bullish trends tend to persist, at least in the short to medium term. It's a momentum story. For investors wondering whether the January effect still works, the honest answer is that it's not reliable enough to anchor investment decisions. Now, that doesn't mean that January can't be strong, but it does mean that the reason isn't because it is the month of January. In small cap value, any early year bounce is usually tied to liquidity normalization and position resets, not a repeatable anomaly. ETFs that focus on small cap value can capture that exposure, but they also carry higher volatility and risk year round. Most importantly, when you're talking about things that have happened like this, the key is not to chase. Chasing a short-term seasonal trade without understanding the broader market context, well, it often leads to disappointment. This goes back to what has been said on this program each and every day. Know what you own. Understand the dynamics that are driving the assets that you are invested in. Have a reasonable, sensible story for why you're invested in those stocks. Oftentimes, we get people calling in about meme stocks, things they have just heard about. Without understanding the underlying fundamentals, the products, the business, the sector, what is really driving the prices? The most durable lesson, or really just the more durable lesson from the January effect, isn't about timing. It's about discipline. The market rewards consistent strategy. It rewards risk awareness, and it rewards patience far more than it rewards calendar-based superstition. So, if you say to yourself, does the January effect sound too good to be true? Can I buy stocks on the first day and guarantee myself higher expected returns? The answer is, when something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Well, guys, I don't know about you, but I am excited for 2026. And we have a lot planned for this show, for this program, for the content that we are delivering to you guys each and every day. But I want to remind you, we cannot grow this family without your help. So if you enjoy the show, please head over to iTunes, head over to Spotify, leave us a rate and review, and don't forget to tell at least one person that their New Year's resolution for 2026 should be tuning in to InvestTalk. For the next InvestTalk, we'll be playing the 2025 holiday special. Justin and I looked back at the year that was 2025 and look ahead to 2026. We talked about the question of the year, and we had a couple funny stories. At least, I think we're funny. The InvestTalk Holiday Special will be airing for all of you tomorrow. That being said, I'm Luke Guerrero and ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART. It's a good idea for you to learn about NordProtect, an identity theft protection service you can trust. I've been looking into it, and I think you should too. NordProtect is built to help users safeguard their identity with advanced, automated features that work in the background 24/7, such as dark web monitoring, credit monitoring, and security alerts. NordProtect plans come with financial coverage across a wide range of threats, from identity theft to online fraud and scams, so their users are covered when it matters most. NordProtect is all-in-one identity theft protection that equips you with everything you need to keep your identity safe. NordProtect offers three types of plans: silver, gold, and platinum, so that every user can find the perfect fit for their budget. Getting started is simple. You just buy your plan and complete a quick setup. NordProtect comes with identity theft recovery and cyber extortion protection for your peace of mind. Get an exclusive 5% off on NordProtect plans. Go to nordprotect.com/investtalk and use the code InvestTalk at checkout. You can also find the link in the episode description. nordprotect.com/investtalk and use code InvestTalk.
The new year is almost here, and it's a safe bet to assume you might have finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero, especially if you are wondering about potential tax implications. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Daniel, and I am calling from Maryland. And I am calling in regards to American Airlines, ticker symbol AAL. And I'm calling to get your perspective on it. This is a stock that I've had for several years now. I have purchased it at different price points to the point where my average cost is now just under $15. And now that the stock is over $16, I'm just wondering if this would be a time to sell it and invest that money elsewhere, or would this be a stock that would be worth holding on to if there's any possible future potential for it. This stock makes about 8% of my total portfolio. So I'm just curious. I know I've heard in the past that you guys are not big fans of airlines or travel in general, but I just wanted to get your opinion on it. Thank you very much. I look forward to the answer on the podcast.
Sell it. It's an easy one. Sell it. Now I'll dive into why, just to give you a little bit more knowledge here. But there's a reason why we don't like airline stocks. And it's not that we don't like travel stocks. I mean, there are some hotel companies that we like. There are some transportation companies that we like. But airlines are a terrible business. They're incredibly expensive. Their input costs are incredibly volatile because jet fuel is one of American Airlines' largest costs. It's one of any airline's largest costs. And so when oil prices fall, there's a bit of margin relief that's positive for the stock. When oil prices rise, immediate pressure on earning expectations. It is incredibly cyclical. It is dependent upon people having disposable income to travel. And there can be headwinds that come out of nowhere that just make them very difficult businesses. Now, American Airlines specifically, it's an $11 billion market cap company. It's got $36 billion in debt. Its interest coverage ratio, which is the amount of EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, it has relative to its interest expense, is 0.37. They're underwater relative to their interest expense. It has been a terrible performer going back to 2019. Absolutely horrendous. It's down 10% this year. It is up over the past 3 months. There's a huge turnaround after, you know, management commentary on demand, on costs, on margins. But they're bad businesses. You have a finite amount of capital, and 8%. 8% is a lot for any individual name in your portfolio anyway, especially one as volatile as American Airlines. So now you're at a gain. I'd put my money elsewhere. That's American Airlines Group, ticker AAL. Looks like we got our first live call, Jake from Kansas City. How can we help you?
Well, I was calling about Steel Dynamics. I've heard you mention them a couple of times on the show. Kind of wanted to touch base on them. They've had a pretty good run lately. Is it played out? Is it time to get in? What are we thinking on this one?
Yeah, so Steel Dynamics is a steel and metals company. So they're a vertically integrated producer. They have steel mills. They have metals recycling. They also have steel fabrication that is more of their construction focus. Over the past 3 months, pretty strong performance, up 29.64%, up 55.34% year to date, up 53% over the past 52 weeks. Now, at the same time, you're seeing revenue be all over the place, right? They had huge growth coming out of the pandemic, but it's tapered off a bit ever since then. But, you know, net income's been volatile as well. And this is something that tends to happen in a cyclical name such as this, right? It tends to happen in a cyclical industry overall. But I think that Steel Dynamics, although it's a solid company, obviously it's a solid company, it's trading at about, you know, slightly below its high over the past 5 years, price to forward-looking earnings. Net income, again, hasn't been growing. Revenue hasn't been growing. Its return on equity is only about 13.5% this year. And there's just a lot that is going on to the industry. Now, this company specifically, they've had consistent dividend growth, which is great. They've had aggressive share buybacks, which has floated the price of this company as well. But this is a typical cyclical stock. It outperforms when growth expectations rise. It sells off very quickly in times of an economic slowdown. Then you add in, right, you have a global oversupply fears, especially from China, that can pressure U.S. steel stocks. How much of an effect are tariffs going to have there? 2026 is going to bring a decision on whether or not the tariffs are legal in the first place. And so to me, it's a little bit run up here. So although it is probably one of the better steel companies, given its run-up, given its valuation concerns, for now, I would say keep it on your watch list. That is Steel Dynamics, ticker STLD. Thanks for the call. All right. What to talk about now? Why don't we talk about mortgages? Mortgage rates have, well, they've fallen, right, to their lowest levels in about a year. But the housing market remains stuck because millions of homeowners, they're locked into those sweet, cheap loans that, understandably, they don't want to give up. Roughly 30 million households, or more than half of primary mortgage holders, have rates at or below 4%, thanks to buying or refinancing during the ultra-low rate period from 2020 to about 2021. So even with these recent declines, today's mortgage rates are roughly double what those owners pay, making a move financially unattractive for anyone who does not absolutely have to relocate. This so-called lock-in effect has essentially frozen housing turnover for 3 years, sharply limiting the number of homes for sale and keeping inventories well below historical norms. Economists say a surge of new buyers is unlikely while mortgage rates remain above 6% because higher monthly payments overwhelm any benefit from lower rates at the margins. Elevated home prices, well, they're adding another hurdle. And rising costs for insurance and property taxes and maintenance have further eroded affordability for those would-be movers. So it's understandable that forecasters, they don't really expect any meaningful relief soon, with the Mortgage Bankers Association projecting the 30-year fixed rate will still average about 6.4% in 2026, even after the recent rate cuts by the Fed. Policymakers have signaled a pause, limiting how much mortgage rates can fall in the near term. And so the math is pretty stark here, right? Buying a comparable home today can mean paying more than 70% higher monthly payments, 70% than the typical mortgage from just a few years ago. Some buyers, understandably, are cautiously re-entering the market as rates drift lower, but prices are softening just a bit. They're softening more asymmetrically, parts of the South, parts of the West, where inventories have steadily begun to rise a bit. And existing home sales are therefore increasing modestly in recent months. And mortgage purchase applications are running ahead of last year, which in a way suggests conditions are improving, but only at the margins. Still, economists say broad affordability gains may take years, leaving most discretionary sellers on the sidelines and keeping housing actively subdued until incomes catch up or rates fall much further. Let's keep it moving and drop in another listener question now.
Just wondering if you guys use any stock screeners, and if so, what kind of filters do you guys have on there to filter out the companies that you're not interested in? Thanks. Have a good one.
So we have our own internal tools to do stock screening using data that we get from various data sources, FactSet being one of them. And we're looking at a bunch of stuff, to be honest. We're looking at various profitability metrics. We're looking at various relative value metrics. We're looking at momentum metrics, other technical metrics. We're looking at size metrics. We're looking at future forecasts from various data sources. It is an incredibly complex thing to try and find relevant data, accurate data, in order to help shape your understanding of not only individual companies, but what the market is saying about those companies, right? Each and every day, the market is making decisions. The market being the collective of all people's buy and sell decisions. And it tells you something. Price discovery tells you something about a company just as much as its generated revenue and its profitability and its future forecasts. And so crunching all this data in a way that we can utilize it necessitated us creating internal tools to help us sort what is a massive, massive universe. So, to answer your question, yes, we do screeners. We use screeners, but nothing that's publicly available. Thanks for the call. All righty, let's take a look at another question. This one, I think, about a ticker we got a question about recently. And it is XYL, that is Xylem Inc. It says, hey, InvestTalk, I was intrigued by Justin's analysis of water pipeline needs in the United States. What do you think of Xylem? They have been consistently growing and have a high PE ratio. What would be a good level to pick this up? Well, Justin talked about it. I talked about it. You know, there is a huge need, for water infrastructure in the United States for various reasons, for many reasons. And this company, what they do is they build pump treatment systems. They have internal analytics. They have smart metering for water and wastewater utilities. And they do this for both commercial, industrial, agricultural, and municipal utilities. About 57% of its revenue comes from the United States, 20% from Western Europe, 15% from the emerging markets. So it's pretty well diversified. It's had a solid year, up 19.48% year to date, up 17.96% over the past 52 weeks, while struggling a little bit over the past 3 months, down about 3.14%. Revenue growth for this type of company has been stellar, 10.3% on an annualized basis. And honestly, that's going back 6 years, even stronger if you just look at it from 2022, from $5.5 billion to about $9 billion this upcoming year. Net income has grown at 17.3% on an annualized basis. And what has really happened here is it's benefited greatly, as have a lot of companies within this industry, from the aging water systems, not just in the United States, but globally as well. There's been increased demand for leak detection because of how dated some of these things are, for smart metering because of how dated they are, for network analytics and utilizing AI in order to improve these systems. They have a pretty strong order backlog. They have multi-year municipal contracts, right? That is a big benefit for companies that operate with cities, those municipal contracts, as they tend to be long dated. And really, you know, you have flood control being an issue in parts of the country. You have droughts being an issue in parts of the country. But this is cyclical, right? It's going to be less volatile than construction or heavy industrial stocks because of those built-in contracts, but it is cyclical. It is going to be a bit more resilient, but it is cyclical. And so these tailwinds are a big benefit here. But you started to see a bit of a breakdown from a technical basis. It is still trading pretty expensive, 25 times price to forward-looking price to earnings. Sorry, it's tough to talk sometimes. It is pretty expensive at 26.7 times price to cash flow, 3.8 times price to sales. And so with this breakdown that started, probably about a month or so ago, I'm a little hesitant to enter a position right now. I'll keep it on my watch list because I certainly think it's a good company and benefits from a lot of trends, but very interested to see what happens in the new year. That is Xylem Inc., ticker XYL. Alrighty, we got plenty of time, so why don't we tackle another listener question now?
Hi, Justin and Lou. Good evening. This is Sade from Charlotte, North Carolina. I have a question about the ticker symbol Henry Charlie Alpha, HCA Healthcare. I do not have this in my portfolio, but I would like to see if the fundamentals are strong and what's your take on this one. I'll listen to you on the live. So thank you so much. Bye-bye.
HCA Healthcare is a healthcare services company. So they focus on acute care for hospitals, outpatient surgery centers, and emergency rooms and clinics. And they've done a really good job because they are heavily weighted towards some of the fastest growing areas, Texas, Florida, Tennessee. There have been some pretty solid core drivers, inpatient admissions, emergency room visits, outpatient procedures. And so you've seen revenue really grow significantly since 2022, up from $60 billion, projected to be $75 billion this year. Net income growing at 10.4% on an annualized basis. And that's reflected in the stock price, right? Up 57.93% year to date, up 15.77% over the past 3 months, up 56.18% over the past 52 weeks. That is some really, really strong performance. Now, it's trading at the upper end of its range over the past 5 years from a valuation perspective, 1.5 times sales, 15.9 times price to forward-looking earnings. It does have a bit of debt, $40 billion in debt, but it is $110 billion market cap company. Now, you know, there are some issues, right? The rising cost of healthcare, rising labor costs is certainly an issue. Reimbursement rates from Medicare and insurers, when effectively, you know, I say this all the time offline to Justin, I say there are really two industries where the government is incentivized to make it less profitable. One is healthcare, because everybody understands that rising healthcare costs is one of the primary sources of inflation for consumers. The other is energy, right? People complain when they pay too much at the pump that government is incentivized for political reasons to try and drive those costs down. But, you know, this is certainly a company that has these macro secular tailwinds. You have an aging population. You have population migration to those high growth states to which it is exposed. But it's run up a bit, obviously. I mean, you can see from this relative strength here in year to date, it's up quite a bit. Are people trying to delay selling gains before the end of the year here? Maybe. For now, I'd keep it on my watch list, a little bit expensive relative to where it's been. Still a great company in a great location. That is HCA Healthcare Inc., ticker HCA. Well, we're headed into a break, our final break. So if you want to talk to me live, you got to call in now. Our goal remains the same. Help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work will continue after this break. So get those questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about PayPal Holdings, PYPL. They've been pretty beaten for a little bit. They're in the upper 50s as of right now, and I'm really starting to like it. I wanted to get your thoughts if this would be a good entry point. The revenue seems still strong, so I'm not 100% sure as to why it's beating up so much, but I'd love to get your thoughts and see if this would be a good entry point. Love what you guys do, and looking forward to hearing you on the show. Take care.
PayPal, ticker PYPL. It's a fintech digital payments company. So think online and mobile payments between consumers, businesses, and each other. Now, the chart tells one story, right? Down 30.39% year to date, down 31% over the past 52 weeks. Really weak performance over the past 5 years, with the exception of 2024. But, I mean, the company is doing a bit better, right? There's margins are certainly starting to improve. Return on equity projected to be at 24.8%. Transaction volume, total payment volume is growing. Number of active accounts is growing. And so what's really happening here? Well, one is PayPal hasn't necessarily done a good job of actively monetizing Venmo, right? They're pushing their credit cards. They're pushing crypto within Venmo. But hasn't really done a good job. And so at a time when online e-commerce is doing really well, why is PayPal not? Frankly, you got a lot of competitors, man. You got Apple Pay, you got Google Pay, you got Block, you got card networks which are pushing deeper into digital checkouts. And so this is, you know, 2024 was hopefully a turnaround story for PayPal. This is more of a reset here. I mean, it's trading at 10 times price to forward-looking earnings. That's nearly the lowest been in the past 5 years. But I just think, and this is a name that we did hold at one time, but we don't anymore. I think the headwinds here are a lot. The competitive pressures are a lot. And I haven't seen anything to suggest that it's going to get out of its funk. So for now, going to have to pass on PayPal. Thanks for the call. One quiet new trend on Wall Street is more of a niche thing, and that is companies that are hedging risk around the president's sweeping tariffs by selling their rights to any future government refunds. This strategy hinges on a pending Supreme Court case that could overturn the tariffs, potentially triggering more than $100 billion in refunds if the administration loses. There are companies like Atlanta-based Kids 2, which manufacture most of its products in China. It's become one of the first known companies to tap this market. Instead of waiting years for a possible refund, they sold their claims to outside investors in exchange for immediate cash, effectively monetizing uncertainty. Under the deal, the company keeps the upfront payment regardless of the court's decision, while investors only get paid if their tariffs are struck down. This company received about $2 million upfront, roughly 23 cents on the dollar for reciprocal tariffs, and just 9 cents on the dollar for separate fentanyl-related tariffs. Their CFO described the transaction as a cost recovery action shaped by both legal uncertainty and skepticism about how quickly refunds would be paid, even if the tariffs are overturned. That trade resembles other Wall Street innovations, if you will, that have turned uncertain cash flows into immediate liquidity, from lawsuit settlements to lottery annuities, and even David Bowie's royalty bonds. Law firms say demand for these claims surged soon after tariffs were imposed in April, with hedge funds treating them as special situations uncorrelated with broader markets. Buyers are effectively betting on constitutional law, while sellers accept a steep haircut in exchange for certainty and faster cash. There's an estimate that the odds of a favorable Supreme Court ruling is about 50-50. And so the time value of money made the deal worthwhile, even if refunds never materialize. Not all companies are participating, though, with some executives warning that even an adverse ruling might prompt the administration to find new ways to keep tariffs in place, keeping this market both lucrative, but also a little bit legally dubious. Either way, I think a very interesting way to bring you a story about maybe a different type of investment innovation. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get 5-7 days a week, really, on iTunes and Spotify, because those episodes are always available. While you're at it, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. Today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your retirements, your taxes, your trusts, your wills, and whether it's all really working together. Justin and I would love to speak with you, because at KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence. Just go to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. It is free and it is confidential. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. We'll see you on Friday.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.